Michael James Parker.
Mm-hmm.
When should poetry be read silently, and when should it be spoken aloud?
When should it be read silently? When should it be spoken aloud? Whenever you feel like it.
What drives that feeling?
Sociability.
Is that really it? Is it that, you know, the wish to share your poetry aloud is purely from a social point of view, that you want other people to hear it? You want to share it? I guess the word social is share. Is that the gesture?
My poetry, I write poetry that I'd like to share on stage, and the rhythm of it, the flow of it, the telling of it. Telling, I'm a bit of a storyteller in verse, in rhythm, in rhyme, and the whole point of that telling is to tell it.
So there, you can't tell it silently.
There's a difference between storytelling and writing something to be read. Telling, the telling part for me is out loud, and I will read anything, even my kind of my intimate stuff that I've written, you know, specifically thinking it will be more approachable on the page. But I'll read it out. It's my voice put onto paper, and my voice will give it. Will embody that voice. I suppose sometimes I write things more carefully when I think it's going to go down on the page, and that's the main way that it's going to be appreciated, in that you can then take my voice out of it. You can take my physical voice out of it, and hopefully the tone of my voice will be there in the writing.
And I suppose that's part of it, because, you know, rather cheekily, this is not just about you, it's about the poetry. But what I mean by that is, are there certain poems that you've encountered in your life, maybe written by you or not, and that other people have encountered, where the reading of it silently is what it needs, and there's something about it that it's just something that you know, you have that silent conversation in your head. And there's other kinds of poems where, even if there's no one around, it would be better to speak it.
There's something about reading a poem where you can go back to the line before or linger on a phrase, stop and pause and go wow if wow is what's coming up. Suck it in, breathe it in, feel a particular phrase or play with words and then move on with it. When it's spoken, it's told, it's all there in a stream of time, and you either catch it or you don't. A lot of poems are it's good to put in both formats, to do that linger or go at your own pace aspect, or to appreciate it at the delivered in real time, like conversation is, like this, you know, like this interview is. I am lingering a little bit when I'm trying to work out what it is that I'm going to say, but I'm saying these words in real time, just like the telling of a poem. And you don't always catch everything. You don't always catch everything that's in a poem, and there's something special in that as well. The, you know, what makes a poem different from a different kind of writing or a different kind of telling is that the feel of what you're trying to say emerges from the play with words. And it's not necessarily specific
I'm rendering you speechless. This is brilliant.
Specific descriptions that you're meant to pick up. So in a telling, there is a bit of that. It's like, well, I didn't quite catch all the words, but man, I caught his vibe. Here's a little illustration. I took part in an international poetry slam in Barcelona, and it was the first time I'd been invited to an international poetry slam, and I thought, well, what's that going to be like? It's poetry. Poetry's about the words. There were about 8 different languages, none of which I spoke. I thought, how's this going to work as poetry? And I went there, and I loved it, and I loved the poetry and all the different languages. And I thought to myself, well, actually, in writing a poem, often you're putting your passion into the writing. And there, up on stage, that writing reignites, relives the passion with which you wrote it. So I was seeing people performing passionately, and I was getting something of what it was that they were expressing. And of course, the thing of pre-verbal and non-verbal communication being a massive amount of what's fully communicated came into play there as well.
So I get that, and I get that particularly from you, Mike, as we sort of chat about poetry slams and what's coming up in the Brighton Fringe.
Yeah.
But I'm still kind of wondering, even in your own poetry or other poems, so that I get that. But are there certain poems, are there qualities where you would say, shh, just let that one resound silently in your head?
Do you mean not perform it?
Or even say it aloud. It just needs the quiet conversation. We're thinking all the time in silent conversation. Is there certain kinds of poetry that don't need to be spoken? Because there's certainly a lot of it out there, isn't there? There are a lot of poets who don't perform their poetry, and they want you to buy their books and read it. And some have absolutely discovered that when they actually do poetry readings, they wonder why they hadn't done up till then. But there are others that still, they don't want their poetry performed, they want it read.
And as I said right at the start, if you want to. For me, there's no poetry that can't be performed, can't be read, can't be spoken. And the different ways that people read, tell, speak, perform it will give a different something to it. Similarly, there's no poetry that absolutely needs to be performed. Words will give something, share some meaning, share some communication, written down on a piece of paper or spoken out loud.
Talking to you also as a creator, as an artist, in other genres like painting, there are painters that I know who paint over their paintings.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that's because of cost, but sometimes it's really important to purge and to burn and let go in order to create space. Do you think all poetry should be kept, or should some be burned?
I think the process of creating poetry involves burning all the way through. I write, I then read it, I look at bits that aren't working, I edit, I burn bits of it, and you know, chip away at the original granite block to find the statue inside. And some is being written to communicate only with the poet. I write some, and in the writing of it, I understand what it was that I didn't understand before I tried to put some words down on a piece of paper, and then that's it. That's its work done. Its job done. I can then walk away and maybe write another poem that I want to share with other people. But that one was just for me. Also, sometimes I write a poem and it's crap. And I can screw it up and throw it in the bin. But maybe the writing of the crap poem brought up could then be a seed of something that's not crap.
You can own your house and to an extent the land below it, but you can't necessarily own all the land that goes down to the centre of the earth. And some people would say even though you own the land on a piece of paper, it still belongs to the rest of humanity and you're stewarding it for the next generation, well or badly. Do you own your poetry?
No. it's out there in the world. I once thought, that I wanted to put everything into books, sell the books, make some money out of my playing with words. I love just spilling it out on Facebook now. It's out there in the world. Take what you will from it. I'm giving it to the world because I want to give it. If someone gives me something back for it, great. But I think the artistic process as a whole is, for me, is a process of giving. It's, you give it out, and that's sometimes where art goes wrong, is when it's given out with a full expectation of being, it being recognised as your ownership and being paid what you expect for it. Art is a process of giving what's going on in you and with you and around you. And then, it's really nice, of course, if something gets given back.
So when should poetry remain in books, in your head, shared with friends, gently shared in groups, perhaps socially? And when should it be put onto the stage in a gladiatorial, Darwinistic battle fest in the middle of the Brighton Fringe with winners and losers?
When the poet decides. All of these different kinds of creation are part of the poet's choice, like the choice of words. I've chosen this word. Why have I chosen this word? Because I thought it was the best word to put in that place. Why have I chosen this stream of words? Because I thought it was the best stream of words that would tell what I wanted to tell. Why have I put this in a show? Because I thought that was the best place to put it. Why have I put it in a book? Because that's where I thought it'd work best. Why did I turn it into pantomime? Because I thought it would be a laugh.
So what happens to the poetry and the audience and the performers when you have this, and I've been to them, this kind of edgy, sometimes really passionate, even angry, but mostly fun, enjoyable competition between poets?
Any number of things happen. The two main things I see happen are on the minus side, a kind of homogenisation of form, where people realise what wins over an audience, and then breaks it down into, you have to do this, this and this, and then the audience will love you. And so you get a whole number of poets all doing the this, this and this.
So that's the game and the rules.
Yeah, and it can get dull. On the other hand, can be a great sharpener of wit. And that spark to say, actually, I want to do this in a way that hasn't been done before. I want to get subtler or sharper or bitier. There's a process that's happened throughout the Poets versus MCs battles, where all the stereotypes became redundant after two or three shows. It's like, no, none of the rappers were remotely interested in guns and bling. The poets weren't all flower-sniffing pansies. And it was... all those stereotypes were dropped and things went a little bit deeper, a little bit more challenging. So challenge, there you go, that's the word. Challenge, you either, you know, you can take up the challenge to make things better. Or, yeah, as some people do, they take the challenge just to win, by any means, and if it's just this is formulaic what the crowd like, then that's the way they respond to the challenge. The challenge is there. There are a million different ways of responding to the challenge.
Final question, because you not only perform poetry, but you've taught it, you've empowered other people of different ages, particularly young people. If there are people this week here, as we sit here in Brighton in the sunshine, in a week of elections, and, you know, looming elections of Brexit and that, but kind of just finding it hard to make sense of the choices that are available to them, a bit bemused by existence, who have a relationship to poetry that goes back to school where they left it behind, how might poetry, either in them trying to write some, them going to see some, or them going to read some, how might poetry make their attempt to make sense of the world easier?
That's a great question. For me, in that place, I'm starting with a few nuggets of information that may not relate into a... may not connect up into an understanding, and starting the process of writing can start to link up those little pieces of information, the data that is around me, and as it starts to form into words and flows of words, something becomes understood. And there can be, you know, a whole range of feelings about that. Sometimes you write something and it gives back joy, and sometimes you write something and it sinks into darkness. Each of those is informing and understanding. And the form that you choose to write your poetry in then shapes and moulds and guides the flow of thought and the flow of feeling. Intuition can rise. Sometimes you can get into a flow that things emerge that you just weren't expecting to emerge. Whether that's coming from subconscious or conscious choice that presents itself there in the moment. I do a lot of work with the rappers, and when they're freestyling, they don't know what's gonna happen next. It's gonna be driven by the rhymes that come to mind, and sometimes that can just be a load of crap because they've just said the first thing that rhymed with the previous line. Sometimes just something comes out that's, whoa, wasn't expecting that. And actually, most of the rappers, when they do that, freestyling together, they'll recognise that. You know, they'll, you know, let the bits of crap flow past them, and then that little nugget, it's like, oh, yeah, we'll applaud that and cheer that. And yeah, I think there's a similar process with poets outside of rap, there'll be bits that don't touch, and then there'll be that little bit that just does.
Can I close this conversation about poetry with poetry? My turn first, and then you get to end it. There is death in the breath where our lips draw nigher as we lay waste a plain for a flower to grow, and we build up the tower of an hour's desire with dust from the pit of its overthrow. A.E. Russell. your turn. Poet thinking up one of mine or one of theirs.
No, I immediately went to Philip Larkin and the Whitsun Weddings, and then my half-awake brain couldn't remember any of the words. My response to the end of this interview is to say, go and find the Whitsun Weddings by Philip Larkin, and read it, and stop and pause, like I was talking about earlier, and that place where you linger at a phrase dotted down there with a masterful stroke.
Poetically ended anyway by Mike Parker. Thank you.